Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And also want to let you know that we're sponsored today by Donors Trust. Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, and additional donor privacy. Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. So, Jim, let's start with the good news and more good news on the recount front. We're very, very close to this nonsense being officially over. For all intents and purposes, it already is over. As we successfully predicted on Friday, the Michigan Supreme Court sided with the Court of Appeals. The recount is over there. Trump wins Michigan 16 electoral votes again. Today, we got a final verdict in Pennsylvania, which is not a surprise since they never really started recounting the votes there. And certification day is pretty much now. This is from the AP earlier Monday morning. A federal judge on Monday issued a stinging rejection of a Green Party-backed request to recount paper ballots in Pennsylvania's presidential election won by Republican Donald Trump and scan some counties' election systems for signs of hacking. In his 31-page decision, U.S. District Judge Paul Diamond said there were at least six grounds that required him to reject the Green Party's lawsuit, which had been opposed by Trump, the Pennsylvania Republican Party, and the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office. Suspicion of a hacked presidential election, quote, borders on the irrational, unquote, while granting that the Green Party's recount bid could, quote, ensure that no Pennsylvania vote counts, given Tuesday's federal deadline to certify the vote for the Electoral College. Most importantly, there is no credible evidence that any hack occurred and compelling evidence that Pennsylvania's voting system was not in any way compromised. He also said the lawsuit suffered from a lack of standing, potentially the lack of federal jurisdiction, and an unexplained, highly prejudicial wait before filing last week's lawsuit. So you can tell he's really torn on which way to rule on this one, Jim. It also points out that with 95% of the votes recounted in Wisconsin as of Sunday, Clinton, facing a deficit of 22,000, had gained 25. So a lot has changed here.
One of those votes represented 1,000 votes, Greg.
But you're saying to yourself, this is all a waste of time. Nothing was accomplished here. Au contraire. Let's go back to Michigan, courtesy of the Detroit News. Michigan's Republican-led House on Wednesday night, so this is a few days old, approved a strict voter identification proposal over strenuous objections from Democrats who argued the plan could disenfranchise properly registered voters. Michigan voters without photo identification could still cast a provisional ballot under the controversial legislation, but they would have to bring an ID to their local clerk's office within 10 days of an election in order for their vote to count. Because the complaint is that people don't have their ID, they cast the provisional ballot, but then it's kind of thrown in with the rest of them because current law, state law, allows registered voters to cast a ballot without photo identification if they sign an affidavit affirming their identity under threat of perjury. That's an option 18,388 residents used on November 8th, and nearly half of those were in Wayne County, including almost 6,000 in Detroit. So, Jim, nothing's changing in the results, but we might actually have even greater verification going forward in a critical state that the people who are voting are the ones who should be voting.
You know, I think one of the things that makes this a particularly good martini, Greg, is those of us who can remember back in 2000, we remember the recount, and we remember an awful lot of legal fights. James Baker was heading up the Bush effort. I'm trying to remember who was heading up. It was Warren Christopher,
yep,
headed up the legal team for Al Gore. And there were a lot of times you would listen to these arguments, and I'm thinking in particular the Florida State Supreme Court, which basically heard Gore's lawyers and basically during the questioning was like, okay, so for you to get what I, for you guys to get what you want, what do I have to say? we complain about legislating from the bench. We complain about partisan judges. You know, the seemed very clear to me that the judges started out with the end in mind. Maybe they've been reading Stephen Covey. Started out with the result in mind and worked backwards the legal reasoning they're going to have to do there. Now, in this case, as you and I have mentioned several times while discussing this recount, Greg, look, we're not objecting to all recounts. We're not objecting to efforts to make sure you get the count accurately. It's just a question of, one, is it going to make a difference in the course of an election? If somebody had even said, look at this state legislative race. It's really, really close. We should recount there to make sure that in that district to make sure that the count is accurate. Or some other race, which was really, really close. But you're not going to find 10,000 or 22,000 or 60-some thousand votes flipping in a recount. And it just seemed glaringly obvious from this. And Jill Stein, in addition to looking like she wanted to just drag out 2016 election to go on forever, there are some of her arguments sound cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And the constant infusion, well, theoretically, if we could attach the alien spaceships in Independence Day to a Mac, then theoretically the Russian servers could hook up to the paper. You know, it was an incoherent argument. And it's really kind of pleasing to see judges responding this way. And I don't think these are crazy, hardline, partisan, rabid, frothing at the mouth right-wing judges. I think these judges are like, look, if there's a legitimate argument for some reason to be concerned about the count being inaccurate, or for the wrong winner being declared, we would go forward with this. We're just not seeing this in any of what you're presenting. And so you need to present something beyond a theoretical possibility of foul play or something going wrong in the vote count. So kudos to all of these judges. I feel like it's been a great victory for common sense. And I kind of feel like from this, we can each state can kind of move forward with a more understandable, widely recognized, common sense approach to recounts in races where the margin is very close to make it, you know, which would be a worthwhile use of public resources as opposed to having to sink, you know, even the, you know, still Stein and her fundraising effort is covering part of it. But in other cases, taxpayers have to pay for this. And it feels like a giant waste of time and money.
Well, fortunately, in one state, it never really got off the ground. In another one, it barely got started. So Wisconsin's the one who's going to be dealing with the major costs associated with this. And maybe the Stein campaign will end up having to foot a lot of that bill. We'll find out. Jim, on to our bad martini. And I take you back to October of 2014. Our bad martini, very bad martini that day, was the revelation that Barack Obama skipped 60 to 63% of his presidential daily security briefings. And the explanation from the White House was, well, he gets the PDF on his phone. What's the big deal? And we obviously did not think very highly of that and how he handled himself in making national security the priority that it ought to be, given that that really is the most important job of the president. So the issue came up again on Fox News Sunday, this time with President-elect Donald Trump. And Chris Wallace pointing out that Trump has asked not to be given daily briefings as long as most of the information is the same. And here is Trump's response.
First of all, these are very good people that are giving me the briefings. And I say, if something should change from this point, immediately call me. I'm available on 1 minute's notice. I don't have to be told, you know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day for the next 8 years.
Jim, I don't know how much repetition there are in these briefings. I've never been to one. I've never put one together. But that's not exactly an encouraging attitude. This should be the number one thing every morning, first thing in the White House.
Yeah. My understanding also is it doesn't take an enormous amount of time. I mean, obviously, look, if there's an enormous, huge breaking bit of intelligence, you know, we figured out how close the Iranians are to a nuke or North Korea, you know, then maybe you're going to get more. But a lot of days, you know, I have a hard time believing this is this unbelievable imposition upon the president of the United States where he can't do the rest of his job. Obama seemed to think that getting it in you know, I would say paper form or the obviously electronic form was sufficient. Those of us kind of wondered about that or left scratching our heads if you're running around saying, hey, look, you know, ISIS is a JV team and things like that. Either they're telling you wrong stuff or you're just not paying attention to them. Or you're in denial about what you're being told. And that assumes none of the reports from the analysts at Central Command who said that their assessments of ISIS were being sugarcoated as they went up the line. Look, it's early on in Trump's not quite presidency, is his era as president-elect. Take the briefings. You know what? You might learn something, you might not. Let's see what happens. You know, my guess is that there's probably some information in that. And the great thing is if you get the verbal briefing, as I understand it, if you want to know more about a topic, you can ask them. And the 17 intelligence agencies, yes, it's put together primarily by the CIA, but they got DIA, which is Flynn's old shop. You think he would trust them? National Reconnaissance Office, National Security. We have a lot of smart people in here. If you want to know more, think of it as like the Google of the world with much better sources, right? Imagine you had the opportunity to ask the CIA anything and you're not taking it? Really? If I were president, Greg, that's all I would do all day. What is the weirdest thing we know about Kim Jong-un, you know? And then you get there and say, as president, I've decided to declassify that. Let's put that out there and, you know, humiliate the little priest. So. And Trump has no interest in this. I don't get it. So anyway, yeah. So Mr. President-elect, take the meeting. What's the worst that could happen?
Mike Pompeo, have fun. Jim, you know, these presidential daily briefings, they're designed to make the job easier. When it comes to year-end giving, that's what Donors Trust is all about. It's the end of the year when almost one-third of all charitable giving occurs. Do you have a plan in place to make sure your charitable giving gets done easily and in alignment with your values? Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, plus additional donor privacy. But only Donors Trust shares your commitment to conservative principles.
A donor-advised fund at Donors Trust can start with your fully tax-deductible gift of only $10,000. Donors Trust clients are united in the belief that private philanthropy does a better job of improving the nation than government. So if you believe in using charity to promote liberty, then you owe it to yourself to look at Donors Trust.
Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. There's no commitment. You'll learn how a donor-advised fund works and how it can simplify your giving, save you in taxes, and protect your giving in new ways. You'll also receive bonus content to help you be more strategic in your giving. Again, visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of their helpful guide. There's no commitment. donorstrust.org/ricochet. On to the crazy martini now, and this is the one getting all the attention right now in Washington, and that is Russia and Russia's influence on the elections. The CIA has released evidence suggesting, through anonymous sources, by the way, to the Washington Post and elsewhere, that Russia was definitively involved in the hacking of the DNC and in John Podesta's email, and definitely did it to influence the elections. The FBI has reached a different conclusion, suggesting that the evidence is not that clear-cut. Donald Trump has responded to the story on Twitter, of course. Two tweets. Number one, can you imagine if the election results were the opposite and we tried to play the Russia CIA card, it would be called conspiracy theory. Then, unless you catch hackers in the act, it is very hard to determine who was doing the hacking. Why wasn't this brought up before the election? John Bolton, who I guess is still in the mix potentially for Secretary of State, wonders if it's a false flag operation because he says Russia would not have been so sloppy to leave tracks that made it that easy to identify them. Oklahoma Senator James Lankford is on the Senate Intelligence Committee. He is strongly in belief that Russia was involved with those hackings, but he's not going to the next step where a lot of Democrats want to go, that Russia actually altered the vote count. Here's what he told Wolf Blitzer.
Well, there's two different sets of information right now and different rumors that are out there. Whether Russia's reaching in, I have no question about trying to find ways to be able to interfere. There's also this rumor that's out there that Russia was hacking into our election systems and trying to manipulate machines. Absolutely no evidence for that. There's this whole line that continues to go out there saying Russia hacked into our elections. They affected the voting. There is no evidence for that, but that line keeps being repeated. Whether that's what Trump is talking about or whether he's talking about trying to interfere in the election, I don't know.
Jim, it's just like everything else in Washington, it's going to be hard to make this nonpartisan. Chuck Schumer wants a bipartisan investigation. John McCain, chairman of Armed Services on the Senate side, wants an investigation. So it's probably smart to take the threat seriously, but also to point out what is actually under investigation, what's not.
Yeah, I look at it this way. I find it very plausible that Russia wanted to do this, right?
Sure,
it's
sure.
Not like, Greg, is anybody in our public debate saying, oh, Putin wouldn't do that? He's such a nice guy. If there's anything the KGB has taught us is that, you know, their men are always honest and straightforward, have no interest in dirty tricks. Oh, okay, we find it very plausible. As I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, look, I find it plausible, but if we're going to enact policy based on this, if we're going to retaliate, if we're going to treat Russia as if it has attempted to meddle in one of our elections, crossed a red line, to use a really unfortunate term from the past 8 years, then there needs to be, I need something more than just an anonymous source talking to the CIA. I find it believable, but this is a very big, very consequential accusation. And I just don't see, I'm going to need to see more, basically. I'd have to know, all right, so which hackers, right? Which outside Russian sources who are connected to the government but are not directly handled it? I just need more detail. And I just have this this wariness. That obviously, the second thing is that a lot of Democrats who are in flat-out denial about the election let's assume this comes out to be true. Let's assume that the intelligence community gives us the information. We all look at it and say, okay, that totally makes sense. We totally believe Russia would do this. Russia hacked the DNC. Russia hacked Podesta's emails, gave it to Julian Assange, and they put it out there. All right, now what? What do we want to do about it? What? How do we want to retaliate? How do we want to respond to this? Other than a strongly worded letter to the United Nations. It's not surprising, and I laid these out in the Morning Jolt, there are a bunch of Democrats who say, well, because of this, the electors have to vote for Hillary Clinton. You know, if you want me to take this seriously, you have to sound something different from the traditional partisan whining. It cannot be the same old thing of the only way this can be fair is if I get what I want. But I don't know if you've noticed, Greg, but all Democrats are like, their voices go up three octaves. At least that's how it sounds to my ears when they say this. And I'm sorry, guys. Like, no, you've lost the election. No less an authority than the Obama administration just saying, look, the election results are fair and square. And the second thing, that they steal a couple of bases here because they keep saying that Russia influenced the election. No, Russia tried to influence the election, right? The election itself comes in people's individual decision-making of why they chose to vote for Hillary Clinton, why they chose to vote for Donald Trump, why they decided to stay home, why they decided to vote for Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, Evan McMullen, or anybody else like that. I have yet to find anybody who has said, well, I was going to vote for Hillary, but then I saw the Podesta emails, and then I voted for Trump. Or then I stayed home, or I voted for Jill Stein. I suppose these people might exist. I have not seen any polling to indicate this. I have not seen any focus groups or voters' interviews that would make you say, ah, you know, this is why Trump won, is because of these particular leaks. I think it certainly wasn't good news for the Hillary Clinton administration, but I think deep down, the election turned on much bigger factors. And so as a result of that, it's much easier. You know, Democrats want to believe that they didn't really lose. They want to believe the election is stolen. They're seizing upon this in an effort to try to hand wave away the election results, or at the very least create the familiar narrative, oh, selected, not elected, not my president, that he's not legitimately president of the United States.
Jim, I guess we can call off the investigation. I'm just noticing on CNN right now that it has been concluded by one outgoing Senate Democratic leader, Harry Reid, that it's clear that there was collaboration among Trump, WikiLeaks, and the Russians. So if Harry Reid says it is the case,
well,
I guess
he also said that Comey decided the election in that same interview. So because we're both totally paying attention to each other, we never check Twitter while we're taping this. So he says this. And then we've got a situation in which, so apparently in the mind of Harry Reid, the KGB or FSB, the former Russian KGB, and the FBI work together. Their first team up ever. It's like that Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Belushi movie. Have decided to team up in order to stop Hillary Clinton. Okay, yeah, sure, guys. I'm buying that.
Might as well just give your credibility another kick in the shins while you're headed out the door, Harry. Well done.
Actually, more of a punch in the eye when it comes to people. It's another black eye for Harry. Oh, we can't do that. Yes, man, that exercise equipment's got a mean left hook.
On that note, Jim, can't do any better. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And reminder to visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download the free copy of their helpful guide, No Commitment, donorstrust.org/ricochet. And join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.